Welcome, Fanatic Esquire subscribers.
Patrick Berglast here.
David Horton, and welcome to the 34th episode of the Fanatic Esquires. And this month's episode will be a great one. We are going to briefly recap Wyndham Clark winning the U.S. Open, then talk about the Women's College World Series and the latest in the Men's College World Series, the recap of the Stanley Cup and NBA Finals, the reaction to the Bradley Beal trade to the Phoenix Suns, and a brief preview of what Patrick and I think will happen in the NBA draft for his New Orleans Pelicans and my Memphis Grizzlies. Let's start it off with Patrick's day in sports history.
Yes, thank you, David. This day in sports history, Juneteenth, 1846, the first officially recognized baseball game in history occurs. They played according to Cartwright rules. I believe that was the first rules that of baseball that were established, where the New York Nines defeat Knickerbockers 23-1 at Hoboken, New Jersey. 1867, the first Belmont Stakes in history occurs, where Gilbert Gilpatrick aboard Ruthless wins in 3 minutes and 5 seconds. 1936, German boxer Max Schmeling KOs up-and-coming American heavyweight Joe Louis in 12 rounds at Yankee Stadium. 1946, in the first ever TV boxing spectacular, American heavyweight Joe Louis KOs Billy Kahn. And 2000, the Los Angeles Lakers defeat the Indiana Pacers 116-111 in Game 6 to win the franchise's first title in 12 years, and Shaq and Kobe's first title as players.
That was a great day in sports history with the first baseball game recorded and the Belmont Stakes, and then Kobe and Shaq getting their first title together with the Lakers 23 years ago.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was definitely a gold mine for a lot of great sports news which happened.
We're going to talk about Wyndham Clark. He won the U.S. Open with going 10 under par, and he became the fourth player to win an event after making his first cut in the event. I thought that was an interesting stat. I did watch most of the final round last night, and it was great. It was a little concerning for him that he might blow it because Rory McIlroy was coming on, but Rory missed a key opportunity by bogeying the 15th hole in the final round, and that kind of dent his opportunity to be able to catch up with Wyndham Clark.
Yeah, congratulations to Wyndham Clark. Just a great, great achievement. And you always, you know, hope for those stories. And he just did a great job and just was just a great, was just so consistent and so consistently great throughout the tournament.
Yes, and also Ricky Fowler in the third round and the final round kind of fell off from his lead.
Yeah, that's unfortunate when someone falls off like that. But that's just how golf goes. People will fall off, but some people will just rise to the occasion and just play very consistently over the course of so many holes and maintain that and ultimately triumph.
Yes. Congratulations again, Wyndham Clark, for winning the U.S. Open, and hopefully it might be many more majors to come for him.
Yes. Congratulations, Wyndham Clark. Big achievement.
Yes. Patrick, do you want to recap the Women's College World Series where Oklahoma completes the three-peat against Florida State?
Yes, the Oklahoma does complete the three-peat. The 2023 College Softball World Series was held in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. It featured Alabama, Florida State, the now three-time defending champion Oklahoma Sooners, Oklahoma State, Stanford, Tennessee, Washington, and Utah. Of the SEC teams which made the World Series, only Tennessee made the semis. The chalk basically held for the bracket. The three-seed Florida State was the highest seed after one-seed Oklahoma, and both advanced to the final. And this World Series was significant as it marked the end of the legendary career of Alabama pitcher Montana Fouts. College softball's best pitcher in 2021, Fouts was a two-time first-team All-American and represented the United States as softball pitcher in the 2022 World Games in Birmingham, where the team won gold. In the finals, Oklahoma opened the series by routing the Seminoles 5-0 with 9 hits. They clinched their three-peat next day on June 8th with a 3-1 triumph, which FSU actually led 1-0 entering the fifth inning. Alex Duraco of Oklahoma earned the win in Game 2, and first-team All-American pitcher Jordy Ball got the save. Oklahoma also smacked 2 home runs in the clincher. This also marks the end of Jordy Ball's tenure with the Sooners, as a week later she announced she was transferring to the Nebraska Cornhuskers.
And also, Oklahoma has a 53-game winning streak and would be classified as the Alabama of softball right now.
Yes, 50-game winning streak. That's a very tough accomplishment to reach, and they reached it, and they could, you know, push this as far as possible. I mean, they are a talented team, and they keep bringing back great talent. So I expect I would foresee them continuing that and not slipping, if at all, but not slipping much.
Also, Oklahoma pitcher Jordy Ball was named 2023 Women's College World Series Most Outstanding Player, and she was the one that threw a complete game shutout in Game 1 and furthermore pitched the last three innings of Game 2. Also, Patrick mentioned she did announce a week later that she's transferring to Nebraska, and wish her luck with her continuing career at the Nebraska Cornhuskers and probably lead them to the NCAA tournament in softball.
Yes, definitely wish her luck there, and it's unfortunate that she leaves such a great dynasty, but she will be going to the Nebraska Cornhuskers and probably will lead them to the NCAA tournament. Like David said, I would reasonably predict that would happen, yes.
Now we are going to get into the Men's College World Series, and the quote-unquote greatest show on dirt has been fantastic so far. TCU eliminates 7-seed Virginia 4-3 yesterday, and they will play Oral Roberts, the Cinderella in the men's baseball NCAA tournament, again on Tuesday afternoon. Florida goes 2-0 in the winner's bracket by holding on 5-4 against Oral Roberts. Cade Fitcher, the freshman pitcher for Florida, recorded the final 5 outs in that game. And Patrick's 5th national seed, LSU Tigers, play against number 1 national seed, Wake Forest, at 6 p.m. on ESPN. Go Demon Deacons. And Tennessee eliminate the 8th seed, Stanford, 6-4 this afternoon. And they will play the loser of the Wake Forest and LSU game.
Yes, definitely a big time game tonight. LSU versus Wake Forest. LSU has been the hottest team after their bad performances in the SEC tournament. They have been the hottest team in college baseball, but so has Wake Forest. Wake Forest did have almost a slip up against Stanford in the opening game on Saturday afternoon. But they managed to overcome that and win that game. LSU almost had a slip up when they went up 5-0. They allowed three runs. I think there were a couple home runs, you know, single home runs there. But outfielder Braden Joubert came through in the clutch, hit a homer for insurance. Paul Skenes got the win. He threw 12 strikeouts with a 1.81 ERA. Riley Cooper came in and got the save. And I think that it will just be a great matchup tonight. Because Paul Skenes played on Saturday, he will not be starting tonight. But I think that the bullpen of LSU with Thatcher Hurd should provide a great performance. And I also believe that the leadoff hitter Dylan Cruz, along with Trey Morgan, Joe Bear, and others will provide a great challenge to the top seed Demon Deacons, who both come from really strong conferences of college baseball, which most so many teams from their conferences made the tournament, and I think that it will be a fantastic game. And whoever loses, well, I mean, they're still in it, and they will have a good chance, but they will have to play sometime early this week. Yes, but I have great confidence in my Tigers to pull it through tonight against a great team like Wake Forest, and I think that should be the team that should be the finals matchup. But we will see later.
Yes, we will. And Wake Forest has been blowing out their competition throughout the NCAA tournament. Before that game with Stanford, where it was a little tight for them, they were able to pull it off. I guess can't wait to watch that LSU-Wake Forest game tonight once we get done recording. It's going to be great, and I think Wake Forest is going to pull through and will set up another LSU-Tennessee matchup.
Never hurts to beat the Vols twice if it comes to it, but I would predict that LSU does pull the quote unquote upset 5-1 in this particular game. I think that the momentum of both teams, but I think that the hitting of LSU and the improved play of their bullpen should enable them to prevail in a place they're most comfortable in, Omaha College World Series.
I think Wake Forest will be able to go all the way and might meet up against Florida. But it would be nice to see the Cinderella Oral Roberts make it all the way to the Men's College World Series final.
Yes, and if that was against LSU, because I would not want to, I would probably stop watching if LSU were to be eliminated afterwards. But it would be a nice thing it would be a nice consolation, knock on wood, LSU doesn't lose and get eliminated, for a team like Oral Roberts to win the World Series, or we keep it in the SEC, even though, you know, the guy, Jack Caglione for Florida, did challenge Paul Skenes and Dylan Cruz for the Player of the Year, and luckily Paul Skenes won that one, but it would be nice for the SEC conference to keep it in the conference after Mississippi State and Ole Miss won those championships.
Yes. Now we are shifting gear, going into our recaps of the Stanley Cup Final and the NBA Finals. And we're going to start off with the Stanley Cup Finals, where Patrick was correct on his prediction.
Yes, the Las Vegas Golden Knights cruised to their first Stanley Cup title since entering the NHL in 2017, winning their four games in their 4-1 victory over the Florida Panthers by an average of 6-2 scores. They ended the magical run of the Panthers, ultimately. Center Jonathan Marchessault won Finals MVP after accruing 8 points, 4 goals, and 4 assists, and achieving the best plus-minus for the team and also for the entire series. But I think it was a team effort, though. There were a lot of, he did not have the most points on his team. His plus minus was was tied with, I think, a couple others from his team. But because he was such a point machine throughout the playoffs, I think it was almost a cumulative thing for them to give it to him after the great performance that he had and the great performance of the Knights in this particular series. Jack Eichel was another guy who, Eichel was another point machine for the Knights as well. And 5 Golden Knight players accrued 6 points or higher in this series. And the only true drama in this series came after the Panthers cut the series lead to 2-1, and there was a tight game 4. Vegas led 3-0, largely thanks to two goals by Chandler Stephenson. Florida cut the lead to 3-1 near the end of second period, and then 3-2, just 4 minutes into the third period, but Vegas held on, even fending off a power play with 17.4 seconds left. Aiden Hill was critical in stopping 29 of 31 shots in this grueling effort. And then game 5, the clincher, was a clinic, pretty much. Vegas simply started the scoring at 2-0 in the first period. Then they went on to score 4 goals in the second period, breaking the game open at 6-1. Florida did their best to keep it close in the third period, scoring a couple of goals, but trailing 7-3, that wasn't going to be enough. And then Vegas tacked on 2 more goals for good measure and clinched the title in style. And Mark Stone, that game, was simply unstoppable in scoring 3 goals, a hat trick, and 6 other Knights scored 2. So everyone had a chance to score a goal in that particular game. So congratulations to the Golden Knights. Well deserved. the best performing team in the playoffs. And congratulations to the Panthers for their Cinderella run. Sorry it ended as brutally as it did, but you will be in the hunt for years to come.
Yes, I watched a good part, almost every game in the Stanley Cup Finals, and clearly Vegas was the better team. You mentioned in the previous episode their defense. They were just hellacious on their defending end, and they wouldn't allow Florida to be able to make any shots in the middle of that offensive zone. And Adin Hill played a whale of a series and was the first goalie to win 10 playoff games after not even playing in the opening round. And he definitely earned himself some money this offseason. I think he should probably stay as the starting goalie for the Golden Knights. And Vegas has a great chance to run it back next year. And also, Florida could not generate anything in the power play. I would say that the Golden Knights defense and the lack of scoring opportunities in the power play for Florida were the keys to this Stanley Cup final. And Matthew Tkachuk getting injured in game 4 and not playing in the clinching game 5 hurt Florida, but I don't know if he was going to make a difference in that game, because once Vegas scored those 2 goals in the first period and start tacking on in the second period of game 5, it was over for my Florida Panthers. And again, congratulations to the Vegas Golden Knights. Well-deserved Stanley Cup Finals. The playoffs were great. Hopefully next year, the Colorado Avalanche and the Nashville Predators can make the playoffs and go on deep runs.
Yes, what a great conclusion to a great playoffs and a great season. And you just never know. And with the Nashville Predators and the Colorado Avalanche, there will be many teams competing for the Cup next year, and with very viable probabilities to do well there.
Now to the NBA Finals recap, where the Denver Nuggets clinched and claimed their first NBA title, actually last Monday, against the Miami Heat in a close one. I believe 94-89 was the final score. I was trying to remember from the top of my
head. That sounds accurate.
Yeah. I have to commend Miami throughout this whole playoffs run. They had a Cinderella run, but Denver was clearly the deeper and better team, and they had no answer for Nikola Jokic, who was named the finals MVP, and then Jamal Murray coming along as quote-unquote Robin Batman 1B, if you would say.
Yeah, obviously Nikola Jokic, 30-14-7 stat line. 58% of his shots, 42% of his threes, 83% of his free throws, so solid all around. Jamal Murray racked up a 21-10 stat line for the series. Aaron Gordon stepped up in a critical game 4. He scored 27 points. On the Heat side, Bam Adebayo contributed 22-12 averages for the series, and Jimmy Buckets contributed 22-6-5. But neither were as efficient as they were during the regular season, and they kind of continued a pattern of poor shooting that they were having in the playoffs so far. They did not make a lot of shots of their attempts. Kyle Lowry was at least true to form for them, but his averages were not going to be sufficient enough to overcome what Denver had going for it. Yeah, like David said, the championship was not won easily, though. In Game 5, Jimmy Butler turned into Jimmy Buckets. Late in the fourth quarter, scoring 8 straight points to give the Heat a 1-point lead with 2:45 left. And then the defining play of the game, Bruce Brown followed clutch free throws by Butler to give them give the Heat a 1-point lead. He did a offensive rebound and tip-in to give the Nuggets a 1-point edge. And then with 15 seconds left, Butler still could have tied the game, but he jacked up a 3 and he missed it. And Denver went on to make the free throws that clinched the game. And also, Miami did not shoot well this game, and even though Denver stank from three, only shooting 18%, they still shot 45% field goal percentage, and that was just enough for them to clinch. And Jokic, if I remember correctly, it was 28-16, so he was true to form, and I think he got in foul trouble at some point, but he was still true to form and clinched the Finals MVP in style.
Yes, and I think the Miami Heat missed Tyler Hero's offense and scoring ability. Definitely in this NBA Finals. I don't even know if he came in Game 5. Did he even play in Game 5? I know he was available.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's likely. It is likely. I didn't see the parts when he did play. I do remember the main starters playing. I don't remember Hero that much, though.
Yeah. Also, I was surprised that the Nuggets, when the series went back to Miami, were able to take two games, both games in Miami. I thought Miami would be able to at least win one of them. So I have to commend the Nuggets, Nikola Jokic, Jamal Murray, Aaron Gordon, Michael Porter Jr., and Mike Malone were able to figure out a way to get those two wins in Miami. And once that happened, it was a wrap for Game 5. But it was a dogfight, and the Nuggets have a great chance to bring it all back. But their road to repeat, it's going to get a whole lot tougher with the incoming Bradley Beal to the Phoenix Suns. And I'll pass the mic over to Patrick to talk about that breaking news that came in yesterday on Father's Day.
Yes, it was breaking news. The Phoenix Suns traded Chris Paul, Landry Shamet, multiple second-round picks, and multiple pick swaps to the Washington Wizards for Bradley Beal and possibly Isaiah Todd and Jordan Goodwin. Those details are still being worked out, because indications that we're receiving likely reflect that Chris Paul, the Wizards will trade Chris Paul because...
Or buy him out.
Because Chris Paul expressed a strong preference for the West Coast to be near his family in Los Angeles. And it's possible he could return to the Clippers. That seems to be his top choice. Plus, the Wizards are starting to rebuild, and they feel like if they rebuild and they trade or buy him out, they will be able to start the rebuild properly. And it's a rebuild that was long overdue. But now Bradley Beal joins the Kevin Durant and Devin Booker Phoenix Suns, and there's some kinks that need to be ironed out with this, because there seems to be some rumors about DeAndre Ayton again possibly being traded, but with incoming defensive-minded head coach Frank Vogel coming in, they will work things out and work well together, and he will be a defensive force this year, because they're sacrificing a lot with their depth and what they've been trading, and they've been too top heavy in the past, and that cost them NBA Finals, and also cost them, you know, dearly in the playoffs last year and this year, being as top heavy as they were. Plus, Bradley Beal is going to have to become a point guard now, because Devin Booker is the scorer, and so is Kevin Durant, and they need to have. I mean, is Cameron Payne going to be the point guard? Maybe so, but it just seems like Bradley Beal has to be that point guard player for them. They need to have a distributor there that sets up the offense and gets everything in place. And I mean, do we want the next NBA champions to be led by Cameron Payne? I mean, maybe so. He's a pretty good player, but he's not Bradley Beal caliber at all.
Caliber.
And it's not a good indication when your weakest link happens to be probably the most important position on your basketball on your starting lineup. So I just don't know. But they will have to figure this stuff out. Maybe they will have to trade DeAndre Ayton to get some defensive depth, because the way they keep on trading these players out, it's going to be tough for them to be a really good team in the playoffs when everyone's dead tired after playing 82 games. And then they're going to be playing 100 games. So they will need that defensive depth. And we will see what happens with Frank Vogel coming in, because his reputation is defense. Washington, it was well past due for them to start their rebuild, and they did it. They finally did it. It wasn't the right way. Probably wasn't the way they wanted to do it, because they only got in return Chris Paul, who they will either buy out or trade, Landry Shamet, second round picks and pick swaps, which will probably not be very good. And it all derived from Bradley Beal's max extension when the no trade clause was integrated into that contract right there, and that did kind of screw them over in terms of the compensation they would probably get, because there was such a limit on who they would be able to trade with. And ultimately that means that the offering team really can set the market in that particular instance right there. So but they started the rebuild, and we will see what happens if they can convert the Chris Paul acquisition to some good draft picks in the future, or some pieces down the road, or they buy him out, but still, you know, use their draft picks wisely, or whatever they have wisely, and convert those into picks down the road. So it will all come down to that, and we will see how the season goes. And it was probably the best thing for them to do this before the new CBA comes into effect, which I believe is July 1st. So good job, I guess good job to both these teams. I really don't know how to judge this, but I mean, we will see if Bradley Beal stays healthy with Kevin Durant. They seem to have health problems as of late. So
Devin Booker.
So great job, I guess. I don't know, but we will see what happens next year.
I was just going to say your analysis was great, Patrick. And I think that Chris Paul will get bought out by the Wizards, because I don't think there's going to be a lot of teams that are on Chris Paul's list of destinations that will have the trade.
Who could afford him. I think when he got traded, he got like a $12 million bump or something.
Yeah. So his contract and his age, his injury history. I would like to see him with the Lakers, but he has the Clippers as his top preference. But for the Suns, okay, yes, you get another top-tier player, but the depth is the main question with them. Outside of Cameron Payne and also TJ Warren, like, who else do they have coming off the bench? And that's why I think that Matt Ishiba, the new owner, is not done. He's going to trade DeAndre Ayton to be able to get more depth to surround Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, and now Bradley Beal. I'm just going to put this out there. The Phoenix Suns are not going to win the NBA Finals next year, because I don't think they'll have the depth, and also the injury history lately with Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, and to an extent, Bradley Beal will hinder the Suns from winning the NBA title next year. I have a better feeling of the Nuggets repeating than the Suns winning next year. And then for the Wizards, this trade starts the full-on rebuilding process. I think they were in the process of doing the rebuilding over the past few years, and now that they have the weight of Bradley Beal's contract off of them, they can shape it up, the rebuilding process, with Kispert, Avia, and I think they're projected in this draft to pick Anthony Black from Arkansas with their 8th seed, so they could have a nice young core to be able to develop. And the West gets tougher as a result of this trade with Bradley Beal to the Suns.
Yeah, the West will be, as it is always, it's going to be the most compelling story of the NBA season, like it was last year. And I think that there will be a cornucopia of great teams competing for the top spots. And the 8th seed will probably be better than the 5 or 4 seed for the East, depending on who will be there for the East. I just think that the West is just too stacked and too consistently stacked to really be threatened seriously, unless they're playing against a top-tier East team like the Celtics or the Bucks or the 76ers, but injuries, and they're probably gonna be losing James Harden to the Rockets will definitely hinder the Sixers in that regard.
And also, the NBA finally announced their suspension with Ja Morant. We mentioned that in the last episode. They handed Ja Morant a 25-game suspension, which I hope it will be enough for Ja to learn from his mistakes. I do trust and believe in his latest statement that he put out once the news broke. I honestly think it should have been a few more games, but then again, with the whole issue with Miles Bridges, with the Charlotte Hornets and the domestic violence issue that he had, I think they gave him only 30 games in terms of a suspension. So the NBA had to tread that line to not make this incident with Ja more serious in terms of games being suspended compared to that situation with Miles Bridges in the domestic violence issue that he had. And also, Ja has certain requirements that the NBA set before he is able to come back, which will be probably sometime in December if he serves the suspension and meet all the requirements set out with the NBA. And I do believe that he will. And the Grizzlies, they will be just fine without him. Zach Kleiman in this NBA draft in this offseason, he's going to be aggressive. That's what he said at the end of the year press conference. Tyus Jones will hold up the mantle as the starting point guard for the Grizzlies, and I believe that Jaren Jackson Jr. and Desmond Bane will step up in terms of their play while Ja is out. But I guess hope that the 25 games will be enough for Ja to learn from this and be able to conduct himself as a better man and a role model to not only to the city of Memphis, but also for the NBA as one of the league's young superstars.
Yeah, this is all about image for the NBA. I didn't find anything particularly wrong with him. You know, he's an American. He's allowed to carry. You know, him doing that thing, showing that thing. But the thing is that the NBA is a very public league, and you know it's all about their image. I mean, if you know it's simple as that. That's the reason why they decided to punish him for something that really was not. I'm not sure. I think he was in Denver when the first video came out or something like that or whatever. I'm not sure their gun laws might be a little stricter or something like that. I'm not sure. I mean, whatever it is, it happened. But the thing is that this was all about image. This is all about image for the NBA, and they, you know, that's the reason why they punished him. It's not because of he was doing anything that was illegal or so or something that was, you know, hurting someone else. It's when you're a public figure and you're in a very public league like the NBA, a very public organization who's exposed on Instagram and TikTok and all these different things, then reputations of the league as a whole and yourself as a player get amplified beyond, you know, comprehension. And it can sometimes be, you know, very negative connotations or reputations that are formed, and it reflects on the league, and the league had to do, and the league did what they did to protect the logo, so to speak. That's what they did. They made that choice. I don't agree with it being as severe as it was, considering the magnitude, the gravity of it. But you know, it's kind of weird, surreal, because they gave Miles Bridges for a very serious issue, you know, legally and you know, just you know, on the bounds of just regular decent social human conduct. And giving him 30 games, and they did this to Ja, and I hope that everything works out for all of them, and I think that everything will be okay, and Ja will recognize his standing as a public figure in the NBA, and will seek to not be as brazen in terms of open conduct where everything he can do be recorded. And I think that this will send that adequate message. It's unfortunate that it had to be, that it was sent at all or sent to the extent, but I think he will get it. And I think that everything will be better because of it for the NBA's brand, as well as for Ja going forward as he grows as a person.
Also, he had to be set as an example for this to deter future players from doing this. So I understand why the NBA had to lay down that type of punishment to Ja Morant. But the Grizz, they're going to be okay. And we're going to give our sneak peek to the NBA draft on Thursday. The number one overall pick is locked in with Victor Wembanyama, the 7'4 teenage phenom center from France, going to the Spurs, which Patrick's Pelicans and my Memphis Grizzlies have to deal with him the next 15 to 20 years. But that's a whole nother issue. There's some drama with Patrick's Pelicans trying to trade up to the second pick with formerly owned majority owner Michael Jordan, aka the GOAT, Charlotte Hornets, who he sold his majority share of the ownership of the Charlotte Hornets, and he is still as a minority owner, but he's probably the biggest minority owner in the NBA because he's Michael Jordan.
That is true, and indications appear that they are targeting Scoot Henderson. It may not make a lot of sense on the surface level because he's a point guard and LaMelo Ball is a point guard as well. He was the rookie of the year. He's the future. Allegedly was when he was drafted 3 years ago.
Yep.
But it appears that the Hornets are targeting Scoot Henderson pretty heavily, and I'm not surprised about that. I would have thought that Brandon Miller would have been the person they target. To have a Brandon Miller, LaMelo Ball, tandem for the Charlotte Hornets upcoming team in the East. But I think that they want to have the best player available, and the best player available here, Scoot Henderson, probably is too insurmountable to just let him slide down to number 3 and then pick Brandon Miller. This guy, apparently from what I'm hearing about this guy is the real deal as a point guard.
Yes.
And the Pelicans, we don't really have a point guard. You know, I guess Herb Jones is like a defensive stopper. He's not really like, we don't have like a true point.
What about Jose Alvarado?
Off the bench.
Do you not want him to start?
We have BI, Brandon Ingram, we have Zion whenever he's healthy.
CJ McCollum. But thing is that we need someone to spread the floor for BI and CJ and everyone else. And we think that Scoot Henderson could do that if we pursue the trade, and we likely may have to trade Zion Williamson to make that happen because they are not going to give up a 2-pick of this caliber without significant compensation from us. They might, and it probably will be Zion and plus for us to get this done. But we have players in the prime of their careers, and I would not want to do a rebuild yet. We might want to do one, but I would not want to do a rebuild yet. And I think that the alternative for us, should this deal not go through or this potential trade offer package not go through, I think we'll be okay. And hopefully we can develop Dyson Daniels and we can have a good young core of great depth, because that great depth has been our strong suit since we've had to play with it because Zion cannot stay healthy. And that is that, and we will see what happens. But I foresee either the Pelicans make a play to get number 2, to get Scoot Henderson, or the Hornets, if it doesn't go through, the Hornets select Scoot Henderson because he's too good a player to select of need. He is the best player available, and probably by a long shot for this particular point in the draft.
I think the Hornets are more interested in Brandon Ingram over Zion. I don't know if your Pelicans wants to do that. If they really want to get Scoot Henderson, that would be a tough one for the Pelicans to swallow.
Yeah, it really comes down to durability and availability. And that's the reason why, Brandon Ingram has been very durable over his tenure with us. We got him in the trade with the Lakers, and he's been just a great player. He's been an all-star with us. And it's a hard decision. And who knows? We might not even make the trade might even not even happen. We may stick with the 14. And then we'll probably have someone who I will predict will come in and spread the floor for both B.I., C.J., and Zion should he play next year. But, you know, and also we have to realize that Zion, he just signed his max extension. We thought that was going to work out for us. And it did work out for a couple of months of the season when he looked like he was the best player in the basketball when he played. And then he got injured and he decided to, relatively play it safe, even though he's been clear to play. And so we are treading a very fine line here, as I will say that. But we will assess what we have, and I am perfectly fine with doing what we have to do to get Scoot, but I'm also perfectly fine if we don't. And I think one of the mocks from SB Nation has a solid player who can spread the floor for us, and it will just increase our depth even more, and hopefully everything gets resolved with Zion to the point where we become this massive super team that comes in and devours the league. But we will see what happens come Thursday night.
I like that last comment about becoming a super team that devours the NBA. That depends hugely on Zion's health. And he might not even be with the team if you guys pull off the trade with the Hornets for the second pick. I think you guys are not going to be able to pull it off, guess because I think the Hornets want Brandon Ingram, and that's probably like a non-starter for you guys in terms of you might be willing to part away with Zion and, you know, give some picks that you guys acquired from the Lakers and the Trailblazers too from your past trades from the past few years. But I think the Hornets will draft Scoot Henderson, and it will be the second best pick that MJ as owner of the Hornets has done since LaMelo Ball, because Scoot Henderson is the real deal. And I was impressed from, I've only seen him in the Rising Star competition from last year's NBA All-Star game, and I was impressed by him, and it seems like his demeanor is what you need to pair up with the braggadocious swagger that LaMelo Ball has and that he plays with. And I think that would be the right step for the Hornets. And then for my Grizzlies, they are interested in trading up in the later part of the draft lottery to select a small forward after we made the right decision to tell Dylan Brooks, thank you for your service, but we're not re-signing you. And Zach Kleiman, as I mentioned before, he's going to be aggressive this offseason, so I would not be surprised for the Grizzlies to trade up in the first round or pull off a trade to get a veteran like Kyle Kuzma from the Wizards, who are rebuilding. But Zach Kleiman will do whatever he needs to address the small forward position, and whoever he drafts in this draft, which the Grizzlies has 3 picks, but they only have like 1 roster spot open. I have great faith in Zach Kleiman. He's going to do the right decision in terms of the picks. I would be ecstatic if they were able to draft Mountain Brook native and Xavier Musketeer Colby Jones with their first round pick, because I think he could be able to be a better version of Dylan Brooks, especially on the offensive side. But he's a Swiss Army knife and I guess one of Xavier player on the Memphis Grizzlies. So the Grizzlies, they're going to be aggressive in this NBA draft and in the offseason, which Patrick and I, we will touch on in next month's episode.
Yes, and what I'm seeing so far is that SB Nation projects Memphis Grizzlies selecting at 25 Leonard Miller, the forward from G League Ignite, and that could be a solid depth player that can score inside, rebound, be a playmaker, just help out. But also they trade up to get maybe get Colby Jones or make a trade to get Kyle Kuzma, some veteran leadership in there too. And if the Pelicans were not able to pull off the trade of either Ingram or Zion +++ to the Hornets for the right to select Scoot Henderson, SB Nation does predict that they will select Bryce Sensabaugh, the guard from Ohio State, a knockdown shooter who can space the floor for Brandon Ingram and Zion. And I think that would be a good consolation prize. I really think so. I think that the team is growing with their depth, and if they keep growing and get some players on smaller contracts, that would not be a bad thing at all. But they just got to make sure it all comes down to Zion being healthy and wanting to play with this really talented young team that is on the cusp of breaking through to the other side.
Yes, we will see, Patrick. We will see. This concludes our episode. I hope you guys enjoyed it. And I guess can't wait to see what happens in the NBA draft and also what happens in the College World Series for the men's. We will definitely provide that to you in next month's episode, where we will give the latest in the offseason for the NBA and give a recap of what has happened in the MLB season. So it'll be a great episode next month, but thank you guys for your support and the listen. David Horton out.
Yes, thank you all very much. Be sure to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. We are the Fanatic Esquires, and giddy up Stallions this Sunday as they play New Orleans Breakers for the right to go and defend their USFL championship. Thank you all very much. Patrick Berglass out.